As a traveler, it's a fact you're going to need to manage your spending in different currencies. You need a service that not only helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, but also does it without the hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This is where Wise comes in. Wise is the easiest way to connect all of your finances internationally. I've been a customer for over a decade. It's been a lifesaver for me as a traveler, a nomad, and now a permanent resident abroad. If you're a traveler who's still using your regular bank, you need to check this out. Join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account could work for you by downloading the app or visiting wise.com/travel. That's wise.com/travel. Thank you to Wise for supporting today's show. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
He kind of said in his thick, carry accents, well, one thing I'll tell you now, don't spend too much of your life in offices because nothing interesting ever happens in an office. And that was it. That was his advice for living. So I've tried to live by that. I always tell this to people who are planning trips to Ireland. You know, leave a day for doing nothing and be open to just meeting people and talking to people, because Ireland has its beautiful scenery and its great things to do. But the real treasure of Ireland to me is the people, you know, the people you get to talk to. And
those were a couple clips from my interview today with National Geographic tour leader and author Jack Cavanaugh. He recently published a bit of a love letter to his home country of Ireland in the form of a new book. It's called Always Ireland, An Insider's Tour of the Emerald Isle. Of course, we're going to discuss that today. You're going to get the scoop on all things Ireland, from culture to where to find the best traditional music, a few incredible and less touristed road trips to consider taking, why chatting and daydreaming are Ireland's two unofficial pastimes, some festivals worth a visit. I'm going to share one of my personal favorite travel moments, which happened to me in Ireland, and where to find some of the best nature in Ireland, and plenty more, all happening today in the interview segment. Plus, I want to share something I had no idea Google could do, or did do, I should say. This cracked me up. I'm wondering if you knew this. I'll share a bit about that. And a shout out to a listener of this show who decided not to settle. I love her mindset about balancing what you want in daily life with travel. All that's happening in this episode right now. So buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here. And welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, what's up? It's Jason here with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. I must say that today's destination, Ireland, is one of my favorite places to go. I actually mentioned this during the interview. It, for some reason, feels like home to me. It feels like a bit of a home. I'm drawn to it. Something about the music, the culture, the people, the nature. I love it, and I'm dying to get back. It's been a few years since I've been in Ireland, and I thought this would be a great opportunity to kind of mentally take us all there. And of course, anytime you talk to an Irish person, they do tend to be able to spin a good yarn. And Jack Cavanaugh, our guest today, certainly no exception to that. He shares a lot about what he loves about his homeland. And as a guide for National Geographic and author, he's able to be a representative of that culture and kind of be that conduit between us as travelers and the people and the place and the earth and the nature that is Ireland. So I'm real excited to bring you this conversation. Listen, I love a good Irish accent as well. I mean, someone tells a story with an Irish accent, it just draws me in a little more. I don't know why. Must be a I don't know if it's a me thing or just a traveler thing. Anyway, before we dive in, I had to share this. I thought it was hilarious. I Googled Ireland. Just see. All right. Let me just type in Ireland and see what comes up. I'm sure there's going to be like billions of things, but let's just for fun see what we find. And believe it or not, on the right side, oftentimes when you Google something, you'll find Google reviews. Well, who knew that Google reviews are enabled for entire countries? How do you review a whole country? I was shocked to see there are almost 10,000 reviews for just Ireland as a country. So, of course, I had to go in and read some of the one-star reviews for you. Just a couple highlights here. Here's a one-star review from Seeless O'Connell. Sounds very Irish. Maybe she's a local. She said, I was bitten by a sheep in Ireland. I repeat, an actual sheep bit me with its teeth. I am not sure if I am now Sheep Spider-Man, but it turns out that I am. I will give you all updates on my powers. Okay. Here's another one from Jack, who says he's a French teacher. Not very good weather and not too interesting. Too misspelled. And here's another one that just says nice. One-star review. I don't know. I mean, what? Who is taking the time to leave a one-star review for the country of Ireland? Anyway, I'm giving it 5 stars. And if you've never been, or you've been many times, I think you're going to love this episode for all the recommendations, the culture, and a lot of the points we hit on with author Jack Cavanaugh. I'll read a little bit about Jack before we dive into the interview segment from his About the Author section of this book, Always Ireland, The Insider's Tour of the Emerald Isle. Jack has worked as an editor for National Geographic International Editions, which publishes books, magazines, and other media in more than 35 languages. He was also the senior editor for National Geographic Books, where he wrote and edited guidebooks on Ireland, Cuba, New York, Japan, and other destinations. Cavanaugh is also the author of National Geographic Complete National Parks of Europe. He is currently working on a book about the UNESCO World Heritage Sites to be published by Nat Geo as well. So it's got a lot of expertise as a traveler, as a journalist, as a writer, as a guide for National Geographic expeditions. I think you're going to enjoy hearing his stories about Ireland. And without further ado, let's get into them. Stick around on the back end. I'm going to have a shout out to a listener. I'll leave you with a great James Joyce quote and a bit of a challenge based on some of the discussion points in the interview segment. Let's get into it, shall we? I'll see you on the other side, my friend.
I did a film with Nat Geo in Tokyo, of all places, so a little bit of TV work, but I prefer words, to be honest with you. You know, I'm not a visual guy.
We are going to talk about words today. I should officially welcome Jack Cavanaugh to the Zero to Travel podcast. Welcome, my friend. I'm loving your book, Always Ireland, An Insider's Tour of the Emerald Isle, which we're going to get into all things Ireland today. I couldn't believe it when I was reading your author bio in the book and saw that you split time between Philadelphia and Ireland. I'm a Philly guy. I'm from outside of Philly. And I've been to Ireland. I mean, you can see I've got like my Irish, you could call it my Irish uniform on today. I got my hat from Ireland. I've got a green shirt. I got jeans on. I was looking through your book and I saw a picture of somebody. I'm like, hey, I'm dressed exactly like that guy. So this is.
Well, yeah, I suppose a split personality. Really, I'm a Gemini, you know. So it's interesting, Jace. I've spent almost half my life in Philadelphia now, and the other half in Dublin. So I don't really know who I am anymore. Now It's nice to have a foot in both camps, and it's nice to be able to go home and to see Ireland as an outsider as well as somebody who's grown up there. There's a nice phrase I read, having the insight of an outsider, you know, which is very true. You see things from a fresh perspective. You see things from I take tours around Ireland with National Geographic expeditions. I lead those. And it's lovely to see my own country from a, you know, perspective of people who are visiting it for the first time and to be showing them around and to be noticing what they notice about it, you know, to be seeing all the good things that you probably take for granted, you know, like anywhere.
In some ways, it's like, yeah, I'm thinking about just being around my kids and the things that they notice. I mean, you get a similar
exactly
version of that as a traveler. Yeah. I guess
it's seeing things for the first time, seeing things with new eyes. It's great. It's a great way for me to rediscover things in Ireland as well and to share them, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, I had to spend a good chunk of my life in Philadelphia because I was born there, but I mean, you're doing it by choice. What are you doing?
Well, that's a whole other podcast, Jason. It's a long, long story, but basically I came over, I was a freelance writer, writing mainly sports in the 1990s, and I came over for the 1994 World Cup. The paper that I was working for was just on the verge of closing down, so I found a job writing in Philadelphia, and I just decided, well, what have I got to lose? I'll give it a year, and here I am, 27 years later. I'm married to a lovely woman who was born in Philadelphia, so we've settled here, but I go back to Ireland all the time. So as I say, I have a foot in both camps, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting to me being from the area. And I mean, well, you mentioned sports. What do you think about the Philadelphia sports fans?
Oh, well, we've had a great year. We got to, like, I think it's four finals, isn't it? Like, the soccer team got to the final, got beaten. The Phillies got to the World Series, got beaten. The Eagles just got beaten the other week. So it's kind of, it's nice and true to form for Philly, you know? And where I come from, we have a thing called moral victories. You know, the Irish soccer team used to have a lot of moral victories. A moral victory would be a 1-1 draw against England, for example. But so I can really relate to it. But I'll tell you a funny story about it. I love Philadelphia. I love the fact that the streets clear, you know, when the Eagles are playing, and you can hear all the shouts from inside the rooms and everything. It's wonderful, you know. It reminds me of Dublin during the World Cup, you know. When I came over here first, as I say, I was a freelance writer, and I had a column in a magazine called In Dublin, entertainment magazine. So I went looking for all the great boxing heroes of Philadelphia, because as you know, it's a real fight town, Philly, and it's had so many world champions that I was actually very excited to be stepping into this legendary place, you know. But the thing is, I couldn't find them. There was no kind of boxing hall of fame, or there was no, you know, big gym with all the photos or anything like that. So I went up to Joe Frazier's gym to interview him, and I talked to his son, Marvin, and there was a huge big photo of him knocking out Ali on the wall and all that. But I kind of foolishly asked Marvin where all the statues were, you know. And I soon discovered, of course, that the only statue in this legendary boxing town is of a fictional character, Hollywood fiction, you know. So that kind of says a lot about Philly. It's kind of funny. It's a fun town. I love living here, you know.
Yeah. Do you? I mean.
It's got its own quirkiness. It's, you know, it's between New York and D.C., but it's kind of. It doesn't have the pretensions of either, shall we say. You know, it's a good fun town to be in, you know. I worked in DC for years for National Geographic as well, so I've seen that side of the capital as well, which I liked, you know.
Yeah. Who's more cynical, the Irish or the Philadelphians?
Well, they both have a kind of dark side, which I kind of like. You know? As I said, with the sports, you just expect the worst here, you know, and you always, you expect the call to go against you, which, you know, as we saw with the Eagles the other week, it did, you know. So there's a certain fatalism here that I can really relate to, you know, with the Irish. You're from Bucks County, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it was that. Is it the fatalism that makes you feel a little bit at home in Philly?
A little bit, yeah. But it's also just kind of a workaday town. It's, as I say, it's kind of unpretentious, and it's rough around the edges, you know, which I kind of like. It's like I was here for a few years, then I moved to DC, but I came back here. You know, when I got married, we decided to settle here. There's just something I liked about it. You know, I can. I feel at home in Philadelphia the same way as I'd feel at home in Dublin, you know?
Really? Oh, that's a nice place to get to when, I mean, being somebody that lives in a foreign country as well. You know, I live in Norway and I'm from the States. So being outside of the homeland, it's nice when you start to get that feeling. It took a little while for me. I don't know how it was for you, but where I came back to Norway and I felt like, like I could take that breath and be like, oh, I'm home. You know?
Exactly, yeah.
Didn't feel like that for a while.
Yeah. How long have you been in Oslo? Jason?
Now it's been about 7 or 8 years, something like that. I'm a citizen now. But yeah, it took a little while to feel like home.
Yeah, there is that moment when you get off the plane in your adopted homeland and you realize something's changed because you feel like, okay, now I'm back home, you know. And it works the other way as well. You do start to become a visitor in your own homeland, which that was starting to happen after 10 years with me. But what was lovely about getting the expeditions job was that, you know, it brought me back more regularly and I kind of felt a part of it. And, I'm thinking about buying a house over there now. So that's probably where we'll end up, you know, when we retire. But as I say, it's nice to have the two places, you know.
When you say the expeditions job, you're referring to your work as a tour guide for Nat Geo Expeditions doing the... I have the
That's
name.
That's right. Yes, it's a trip called Tales and Treasures of the Emerald Isle. I'm not so much a guide. There's a professional guide on it who works full time in Ireland, but I'm just the they call me the expert. But I give a few lectures, a few presentations, and I just talk people around. It's an ideal job. It's lovely. You're basically a host in your own country, which is really lovely. As I say, it's nice just to show people around. To all the places, you know, and to kind of welcome them. I often say, like, you know, America's been great to me. It's given me a career. It's given me my wife and a whole new life. So it's kind of nice to give back to them to bring Americans over to Ireland and give something in return, you know?
Yeah, it sounds fulfilling. And I guess in that way, you're a bit of a conduit to the culture. With a group like that, where you're really introducing them to some of the concepts. Well, I'm going to ask you about culture and destinations, into a whole bunch of stuff. Well, you studied English literature and philosophy in Dublin, and those two majors, I would say, and then like liberal arts are probably the three ones where people like, oh, that's a recipe for just not having a job ever yet. Like, yet you've carved out this amazing career for yourself. I'd love to hear your advice.
You know, when you grow up in Ireland, in Dublin particularly, everyone's a writer of English literature, you know, in a Dublin style or whatever. As you know, the Irish reinvented English literature, and I think Joyce said, you know, Ireland's revenge on England was to colonize its language, you know. So that's true. Everyone's a poet in Dublin and in Ireland, you know. We even have the president is now a poet as well. So there's that. And then, of course, if you go out to the pubs in Dublin, everyone's a philosopher as well, you know. So it's kind of just a natural progression, you know. But it was it gave me a nice grounding in journalism and in writing. I always knew I wanted to be a writer, you know. I always, as I said, I'm a words guy rather than a visual guy, so it was lovely to do the book because I got to put into words all the things that make Ireland special to me, and I got to travel around Ireland and a great excuse to knock on everyone's door and talk to them. People are kind of surprised when they open the book because I think a lot of people with National Geographic, they're expecting a travel guide. Whereas this is more of what I would call a kind of aspirational travel book. You know, I think the days of travel guides in books are gone because, you know, you can keep stuff up to date on a web. You can get a better map on a web and you can see if you get a restaurant booking or whatever on the web much easier than looking in a book, obviously. So I like to think this is like an aspirational travel guide as I call it a dreamer's guide to Ireland, you know. It's a book that you can buy before you go, 6 months before you go, whatever, and kind of just dip into prior to going and read a bit about the history, the culture, the background, the food, whatever you're into, the music, off the beaten path places, and you can say, oh yeah, I'd like to do that, or we should do that, or it's a kind of recipe for daydreaming. And I have a page in the book where I pay tribute to a guy I really admired growing up, a writer in Dublin whose name was Con Houlihan. He's a Kerry man. And Con Houlihan worked for the Irish Press during the short time that I worked there. he was the main sports writer. But to say he was a sports writer, again, is really underserving him, because he was more of a philosopher, and he would give like English literature lectures within a column. He'd write about anything. He just wrote about life, you know, under the guise of sports, and it was great stuff. But he, so he kind of gave me some great advice as to what you're saying there, Jason. He took me for a pint at 10 o'clock in the morning my first week on the job, and kind of sat me down and asked me who I was, first of all, and what my story was and what I was doing in the Irish Press, blah, blah, blah. And his great advice to me, which is, it's in the book, but I'll share it with your listeners now anyway. He kind of said in his thick, hairy accent, he said, well, one thing I'll tell you now, don't spend too much of your life in offices, because nothing interesting ever happens in an office. And that was it. That was his advice for living. So I've tried to live by that. I'm kind of getting away with it slowly but surely, like you know, by writing books like this, which is it's great fun, you know. But it's as I say, it's like a dreamer's guide to Ireland rather than a travel guide or whatever. There are some practical things in it, but it's mainly about, you know, how you see Ireland and how you approach Ireland kind of psychically, mentally, and emotionally, you know?
Yeah, I feel like you're psychically reading some of my interview preparation notes here, because I was going to bring up Colin Houlihan and that exact quote, because I think if you're going to lean on a quote for a life, that's not a bad one, right?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. The other great quote, and I think I put it in that piece on him, but his great adage was, daydreaming is good for you, you know? He believed in daydreaming. Like, you know, if you don't daydream, you're not alive, because, you know, you're not thinking of what you really want to do. You're thinking of, you know, the work I have to get done, or you know, bills I have to pay, or whatever. So I think daydreaming is a very Irish thing. It's very creative. The Irish are kind of connected to the creative arts, and there's a lot of daydreaming goes on in Ireland, and it's good fun. And I always tell this to people who are planning trips to Ireland, you know, leave a day for doing nothing, you know, and be open to just meeting people and talking to people, because, you know, Ireland has its beautiful scenery and its great things to do, but the real treasure of Ireland to me is the people, you know, the people you get to talk to. And Irish people love to talk, as I'm sure you know. But so you should, you know, consider that as being one of the real gems of Ireland, is having time to talk and sit and relax, or, you know, being open to meeting people.
Yeah. Well, this was something you said in the book. You said Ireland's two unofficial pastimes, chatting and daydreaming. So I mean, I just love that advice. If you're going to spend a day doing nothing, well, maybe you can have one or two to-dos, right? Chatting and daydreaming.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's a great way to spend a day in Ireland, especially. I mean,
yeah.
It's such a special place.
Yeah.
It's strange, but I feel at home in Ireland when I have gotten the chance to visit two times, and I don't know why. It just feels right. I thank you for sharing everything that you shared about the book and how it's structured as sort of a guidebook. Because I was going to mention that I feel like this is sort of like a New Age guidebook, in the sense that it's not a guidebook. It's just giving you some recommendations, but there's like no prices. There's no a traditional guidebook type of things. You get more of like the stories and the history, but in a really cool way. So I've been really enjoying it. And, you know, as a lover of Ireland, thank you for that. Thanks for sending it over.
The one thing that we do kind of, that I did steal from, I used to edit guidebooks for Nat Geo. The one thing I thought I would keep in that is drives. Because you can always drive somewhere, you know, and, you'd mentioned to me in an email about pre-planning and you know, what should you tell people who are pre-planning trips around Ireland. And that's the one thing I would say that you can plan is a few good drives. First of all, I think if at all possible, if you can, hire a car in Ireland, because it's such an easy place to drive, you know. Now, yeah, we drive on the left, you know, which doesn't suit Americans, but you get used to it. And it's not like driving around Philadelphia or 95 or whatever. The roads are you know, there's less traffic.
If you don't get used to it, you just die. It's no big deal.
But we do have actually great roads. You know, since I left, the roads got really good. But they're very well maintained. They're very easy to use. The signs are all in English, which helps, of course. You know, and in Gaelic as well. But it's such an easy place to get around. Like, you know, I'm planning a trip with a guy from Ohio for April, and we're just going to base ourselves in Bray, which is in County Wicklow, my hometown. But we're planning all these day trips, and you can get anywhere in Ireland within a day, you know, because the highways are good. But my other advice for pre-planners is, you know, take the highways to get there, to get to somewhere like Connemara, and then go off on the byways, because that's where you'll really you'll meet a lot of people, and they're beautiful anyway. Like, the hedgerows are beautiful, but as I say, Irish people love to talk, and you can just stop and talk to somebody who's leaning over a fence, and you'll have a good half an hour's entertainment, and you'll find out about the locality. And a lot of people will have the time for that. You know, I think using GPS in Ireland is kind of missing the point. You know, I think you're eliminating half the entertainment of Ireland if you don't stop and ask directions and chat with people. And you know, people will be interested in you as well, where you're from and all that, because, as you know, there's 20 million Irish people abroad. So, you know, if you say, "Oh yeah, I'm from Bucks County," they'll say, "Oh yeah, no, guy down the road, he's from Meath, but he's over there these last 20 years or whatever." There's Irish people everywhere, and they do love to talk, and they're very interested in people from outside, you know. And the other thing is the people you meet on the road are great. I have an Instagram page, and I was writing the other day about a woman called Helen Riley. And Helen Riley is one of these people we just met on one of the back roads. Helen Riley and her people are travelers. They're part of the traveling communities, which are, you know, they're not in settled houses. They just go around the country. They're
nomads.
Nomads, exactly. Yeah. Modern day nomads. But these have been in Ireland for hundreds of years, if not thousands. The traveling community. And Helen Riley was just at the side of the road in Waterford. She'd stopped, unhitched the horse from her very old traditional wooden caravan so that the horse could graze. And we got chatting to her, and I've known her ever since, these last 4 years. So I put her story in the book with the story of the travelers, you know. But that's the kind of thing that happens if you have a car in Ireland. It's lovely. You just stop, you chat to people, you learn, you know. You learn so much about Ireland. Like, I've learned huge amounts of Ireland from just doing that in the last few years, you know?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned them having the time to talk. Is it that they have the time to talk, or they're willing to make the time to talk?
It's a bit of both, because, you know, I don't want to paint a kind of exile's romantic view, over-romanticized view of Ireland here, because, you know, I realize it's a modern country, and it's got its problems and it's got its challenges, and like everywhere else, you know, we all have to make a living, and people are busy. But I think you're right. I mean, it's that they do make the time to talk, and I think it's that they appreciate the fact that you want to talk. They'll give you the time to talk, you know. And they also like talking. They like sharing things. You know, they like stories. Irish people are great storytellers.
Why? Why is that? Why are they great storytellers?
I suppose it's just the way history shaped us. You know, if you think of 300 years ago, 400 years ago, there was no TV, there was no radio. So people would just sit around a fire and telling stories to pass the time, you know. But it's also, I think it's to do with the Gaelic language as well. It's a very kind of poetic language, lyrical language. So there's a way of telling stories that's particularly good in Ireland, that's very, very dramatic. A guy in the book, actually, very interestingly, he told me, he's a Shanachie himself, which means an ancient storyteller. He's in that tradition. He's a musician that I talked to down in Kerry, Thomas O'Sullivan. Great guy, great, very eloquent guy, such a good storyteller that we actually had to give him, he's the only person in the book with two pages because he was so expansive, you know. But he was compared storytelling in Ireland to jazz, which I thought was very interesting. And he said, like, you're gonna have your basic riff, you know, like you have the bones of the story, you know. And even if somebody who's heard it before, like, they'll be telling the same stories over and over again in the country But they'll just have new twists on it. You know, they'll add a little bit to make it more interesting, or they'll change it slightly, you know, bring in a new character, or kind of put the blame for a crime on somebody else, and off it goes, and it's a whole new thing. And the Irish are very good at reinventing, you know what I mean? They're very imaginative race. That's what I find from being outside there now. They like that kind of thing of reinventing themselves, you know. And it's being in touch with what would you call it, the higher ground, the creative spirit. I'll give you an example. Actually, I was online yesterday, and something about U2 popped up. So they have a new film and they have a new album called Songs of Surrender. So, and basically what they've gone, they've just redone their whole catalog, or their back catalog, a lot of it anyway. A lot of these songs that he talked about in his recent biography, Bono, you know. But, you know, they've stripped them down, and they've kind of, I haven't listened to it, but what they're saying is they've rewritten the songs as if they were written today rather than, say, in the 1980s or whatever, with the new technology and, you know, with the new voice and all that. So I know a lot of people do that, but it's a typically Irish thing to do, is to keep reinventing yourself, you know. We had to do it because we had to go abroad as well. You know, the part of the book from my own experience that I tried to squeeze into the story of Ireland was the untold story of Ireland, which is the exile story, you know. So there's 20 million Irish people abroad. So they all have to reinvent themselves constantly, you know. So that's part of being Irish, is that thing of going abroad, you know, starting again, start over again. And then maybe some of them come back and have to, you know, do it all again. As you can relate to that, Jason, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off-the-beaten-path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel, and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Now, back to the show. I want to talk destinations. We're going to do it through a little game I'm calling Where to Go For... dot, dot, dot. Where to Go For... dot, dot, dot. So where do we go for nature? You can give us like one or two of your favorite spots.
Nature. Well, my own favorite place to go for nature would be Glendalough, which is a 6th century monastic ruins, but it's where it's set. It's so beautiful. It's set in Glendalough means the Glen of Two Lakes in Irish. So it's in County Wicklow. It's very close to Dublin. It's very close to Bray, where I'm from. So when I was growing up, we would cycle down there. You know, it's about an hour's cycle. But it's just really, really beautiful place. Very, very peaceful. I'm not a religious person, but I do kind of feel there's some kind of psychic energy about Glendalough that's very calming to me. And anytime if I have trouble in my life, or if I need to work something out, I go just on a long, long hike in Glendalough, because it's so beautiful. There's woods, there's two steep mountains going into the glen. Just an amazing place to walk through. You can actually walk all the way from practically Dublin. If you take the Wicklow Way, which is a trail, it would take a couple of days probably, but you can walk right into Glendalough. And as I say, the monastic settlement, St. Kevin's monastic settlement, it's still got its round tower and it's got ruins of, I suppose, what was a village at one point. But it just feels very, there's something about it. Like you realize that you're walking into real Irish history there, because that would be the place where, you know, they wrote the books, they kept the Bible alive during the Dark Ages, and they would be attacked by Vikings and that. So it's a very special place, you know, for me. That's where I would go for nature, you know. One of the things I do with the guests on the expeditions tours is I read them a lot of poetry, because Ireland's big on poetry, and there's a beautiful poem called St. Kevin and the Blackbird. So if your listeners want to look up that's about St. Kevin, who founded the monastery there in Glendalough, and how he kind of becomes part of nature. And that's how I feel about going to Glendalough. You lose yourself, because the nature is so beautiful, that you kind of see your own place in the world. It's not that important, you know, your troubles aren't that important. So that'd be my place to go for nature anyway. One of many in Ireland, I should say. The other book that I wrote was the National Parks of Europe, and so I got to see all the national parks of Ireland very well. And that was just there's lovely national park. Glenveagh up in Donegal would be another national park worth seeing if you're into hiking and nature, and that. Absolutely beautiful place. You know,
that doesn't sound like a bad gig. You don't got a bad gig going on, do you, Jack?
I can't complain, yeah.
I mean, I hadn't thought about, you know, maybe the best nature is just the nature that kind of makes us forget about ourselves, as you mentioned. I think that's a really...
Yeah, I mean, Norway is a wonderland for that, isn't it? It's just beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful,
it really country. Is. All right, where should we go for music? I'm a huge fan of the whole music scene in Ireland, the trad, the whole... I mean, if you want to describe kind of... the culture around music a bit. I know it runs deep. Of course, when you go out to a pub and you hear people playing, or you see the spontaneity and like these jams, and I can start connecting it to, like, you know, this is the foundation of bluegrass. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on. And then you're there in the dark wood. And I mean, I'm getting chills just talking about it, man. Where should we go for music? And you could talk a little bit about music in Ireland and the importance of it to the country.
Music is absolutely huge in Ireland. You know, I think Ireland would just grant a halt if you took out, you know, if music was banned tomorrow, which it was under the penal laws in the 1700s. You know, so imagine the seismic shock of saying you can't play your music, you know. And of course, like everything else, it goes underground, you know. So, you know, you have people playing in bushes and things like that. So I do tell that story to my guests, you know, that a lot of Irish culture and music, it became very subversive, you know what I mean? It's a very subversive thing, the arts in Ireland. It's a way of challenging the authorities, you know, a lot of the time, you know, which is interesting. But I just love going home. One of the reasons I love going home is because I go out to see live music. So I usually end up in Dublin, like, Bray is just 12 miles from Dublin, my hometown. So I have a friend, a great music guru called Keith Brittle in Ireland, and I tell him I'm coming home, and he says, oh, well, here's what's going on that week. So we go and see a gig or whatever. So, you know, I've seen so many gigs in Dublin down the years. The current darlings of the Dublin scene, and I might be a bit out of date here now with this, but the last band that I really was blown away by are a band called Fontaines DC. They're kind of a post-punk band, but I like them because they actually sing in Dublin accents, which I think is great, you know. They don't try to hide it, you know. But it's so varied what you can hear in Dublin and what you can hear around the country. Like, that's the thing about Ireland. Irish people are very open to music of all types. It's very eclectic country musically, you know. Partly because we're an island, so we've always traditionally welcomed outsiders in. We're very good at absorbing, you know, the outside influences and melding them in. And of course, the other thing, as you mentioned there, is that we've gone abroad. You know, we've had to go emigrate, a lot of us, and we bring our music with us. You know, so from the 1840s or whatever, when the famine times, right back to the Scots Irish before that, they would always bring the fiddles with them. So, you know, this is how you ended up with fiddle, great fiddle players in West Virginia or whatever like that. They all settled there, and it evolved, and it became bluegrass, and it became country and western, I suppose, you know. So the people I bring around Ireland are always amazed how much we love country music, you know, country and western music. But it's quite natural because, you know, in a way we invented it, or at least we invented the roots of it years ago, and it went to, as I say, West Virginia and then Nashville and Tennessee and all these places. So it kind of evolved into an American roots thing. So one of the interesting quotes I came across when I was writing the book was, you know the Chieftains, Paddy Maloney of the Chieftains, who died there, I think, late last year. Paddy Maloney said that he felt instantly at home when he first went to Nashville, you know. And that makes perfect sense because, you know, the music was all music he would have heard growing up, and it was very familiar to him, you know. So, like, that's what I love about Ireland is you can go out and you don't know what you're going to get, you know. You could be in a pub. Like, it'd be quite a normal thing to be in a pub somewhere in, say, in Kerry or Clare or something like that. And, you know, if you go in at 6 o'clock, there'd be a session going. And a session, as you know, is it just kind of impromptu jam session where, you know, anyone with a guitar shows up. There's a fiddle player. There might be a baron player with a drum, the goatskin handheld drum. And it would, you know, they'd be playing jigs and reels for an hour or so. And then at 8 o'clock, you might have a country and western singer coming in singing Johnny Cash songs and that kind of thing, you know. And then you might have a rock and roll band on at 10 o'clock, you know, followed by a disco after. Like, it's very, very eclectic, you know. It's Irish people are very flexible, they're very adaptive people, and they do like, you know, they like experimentation, as I said to Jason. You know, it's like talking to Bono there. Like, Bono wrote one of my favorite Bono songs. He wrote for Willie Nelson, song called Slow Dancing, you know. It's very, very, it's a country waltz, basically, is what it is, you know. He wrote another one for Frank Sinatra, kind of lounge lizard song. He did that one with Pavarotti, opera, melded the opera into it, you know. This is a good example of, like, Irish people like to experiment, and they don't like to be put in a box. You know, you're a country and western singer, you're a this, you're a that. So anything goes in Ireland, and the music scene is very, very like that. You know, we're kind of open to anything. I'll tell you a funny story, actually, as you're sitting in Oslo there. So a few years ago, I was on the Nat Geo Expeditions cruise up to Svalbard, and absolutely amazing trip, like the trip of a lifetime for me, because I've always wanted to see Norway. But we were up way, way up north. I think it was a very, very remote little place where, you know, you have all these tiny little villages that are snowed in for the winter. Somewhere like towards Tromso, is that right? I can't really remember where it was. But anyway, the captain made an announcement that there was going to be a folk band being tendered onto the ship for the evening's entertainment. So I got very excited about this because I love music. I thought, great, we'll hear a bit of Norwegian folk music. This should be really interesting, you know. But they introduced themselves as the Gubliners. And I said, what are the Gubliners? They were a Dubliners tribute band. So we were sitting there on this boat, like, you know, on a fjord in Norway, listening to Dubliner songs, which was lovely. It was great, but I got a chuckle out of it, you know.
You tried to get away, and the Irish still followed you around.
It kind of shows you the influence that Irish music has, or, you know, particularly traditional Irish or folk music has, you know. So it was kind of funny, but it's, yeah, it's like music. I should say, though, to answer your question, go to County Clare, to a little town called Doolin in County Clare, which is basically the home of the spiritual home of Irish music, you know. There are four pubs, at least the last time I was there, which was pre-COVID, there was four pubs in Doolin. And they all tried to outdo each other by having the best musical session. I'm trying to remember the name. There's McGann's, there's McDermott's, there's O'Connor's, and Fitzpatrick's. And they're all great pubs. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter which one you go to. Like, you know, you'll probably end up staying four nights there because you want to get around them all. And if you're a player yourself, if you have a guitar with you or a tin whistle or whatever, you can join in. You know, if you're respectful about it, you ask them to sit in on the session. It's a lovely experience. As you know, you've probably seen a few sessions. It's a very spontaneous thing, you know, which is wonderful. You know, it's great entertainment, really great entertainment.
You know, I didn't know, as you called it, the spiritual heart of Irish music, because I spent a couple nights in Dublin on my first trip to Ireland back in the late 90s, dating myself here. I remember it was one of those magical moments on a trip. I had a couple. One was just going in for a pint and somebody coming in and then just singing like a cappella, some incredible old Irish ballad. I was like, what is happening here? This is magical. The next day I walked to the Cliffs of Moher, which is about, I don't know how many kilometers it is from.
Yeah, maybe about 10, 15.
Yeah, I thought, okay, I'm just going to walk.
Yeah.
I'm just bringing this up because the Irish people are so sweet. This woman pulls over, she's by herself, and she just offers me a ride. Now I'm like a dirty backpacker. You know, I'm not even hitchhiking. I don't have the thumb out or anything. Yeah, she just offers me a ride. I said, well, I just came to walk because I wanted to get some air. She's like, well, I'll drive you and I'll show you this shortcut and you can walk along. And I said, okay, cool. So she dropped me off and then I couldn't find the shortcut and it didn't work. And then she's like, I wish I could take you all the way, but I have to go to my friend's, like, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Something.
Yeah.
So I was like, couldn't find the shortcut, came back to the road. And then like 30 minutes later, she comes driving back. She's like, oh, my friend's thing was canceled. So I drove back to get you to drive the rest of the way. I'm like, what? Yeah. You don't even know me. This is insane.
As I say, that's the kind of people you meet in Ireland. Yeah. It's lovely. Yeah.
You mentioned great Irish drives. And that is one of the things that you bring up in the book and getting a car. Because that was another question I had. Should you get a car? Should you not get a car? You kind of mentioned, yeah, like it's good to have a car for some of these things and you can do some of these road trips. And I just wanted to hear your favorite sort of two or three great Irish drives so people can take from this. And if they're planning a trip to Ireland, they can kind of dive in and look at some of the road trips they might want to take.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the first one, you most people probably drive, fly into Dublin. So I'd say do the Wicklow one, which is in the book, and that swings down to Glendalough, which you spoke about, but it's got it goes over in a place called the Old Military Road. It's a beautiful scenic drive. County Wicklow is called the Garden of Ireland, you know, because it's so scenic. It's mountain, beautiful mountain views. It goes over the military road. You'll see waterfalls. You'll see a very interesting place called the Guinness Lake, which is basically a very white sand beach in a valley with kind of black water, but it washes up to this place called Lugala, which the Guinness has owned. It was one of the Guinness's houses for years. It's been sold now. The man who owned it, the Guinness man, died, I think 2 years ago, and they sold it. Interestingly, his brother is very famous as the guy who, do you know the Beatles song, A Day in the Life?
Yeah, of course.
Well, that's Tara Brown, and it was Tara Brown's brother who owned this Lugala place. So you'll see all that history. But then you'll swing down to Glendalough, and you'll swing by a beautiful town called Avoca, the meeting of the waters, and then back through Roundwood and back to Bray. That's one of the great drives in Ireland. But there's so many good drives, Jason. One of my favorite drives, we do it on our expedition, is in County Kerry. And so everyone goes to Kerry and they stay in Killarney and they do the Ring of Kerry, which is a fantastic drive. But try the Dingle Peninsula, which is kind of up a little bit. And it's just a one-way trip right around the peninsula. It's very, very scenic, Kerry cliff country, and you can you see the islands, the Blasket Islands, out to sea. But its focal point is the town of Dingle. So you got to stop in Dingle, you know. And there's a few places I should mention in Dingle. Like, first of all, you know, if you want the quintessential Irish pub, rural Irish pub, stop in a place called Dick Mac's in Dingle. And it's on Green Street in Dingle. And it's the most traditional country pub you can imagine. It's got like an old style Irish bar on one side with snugs, you know, cozy little snugs, which are kind of boots, you would call them in the States, where you can go in and have a kind of quiet pint and a chat with somebody. And on the other side, it's got a leather shop, you know, and this used to be very common. The pub would double as like an undertaker's and this kind of thing in the country town, you know, or a real estate place and that. And Dick Mac's is like this. It's like the perfect place for a quiet afternoon pint. But then like by night, you know, all the musicians will come in. There'll be a session, traditional Irish music session. And as we say in Ireland, the crack is great. You know, the crack is an Irish word. C-R-A-I-C. It's an Irish word. Just means fun, conversation, you know, divilment. You know, we measure a good night out by the level of the crack. You know, if the crack was great last night, you had a good night in the pub.
Not the same crack you get in Philadelphia.
No, it's a little bit different. Right? Yeah, it's not the pharmaceutical type. But Dick Mac's is interesting because, you know, I was saying about over-romanticizing Ireland and it being a modern country and all that. It's Ireland's very good at readopting it to the future as well. Like, you know, it has a foot in the past, but also a foot in the future. So Dick Mac's now is kind of embracing the future. They've got a brew house now and they're doing their own craft beers and they've got they reinvented themselves during COVID and they have a courtyard which has live music in the summer months and they've got food trucks coming in. So it's a whole new kind of thing with, you know, right beside the traditional Irish pub, which I really like that. You know, as I said, the Irish are good at evolving and adapting. And, you know, Dick Mac's is so traditional that it's great to see that, you know, they're able to move with the times as well while keeping the essence of what made it such a great spot. But I also want to mention while we're on Green Street in Dingle as part of your drive, a place I mentioned in the book as the 10 most musical square feet of real estate in Ireland, I call it, I think. And it's a little place called the Dingle Record Shop. And it's literally 10 square feet. And there's two people in there who run it, Maz O'Flaherty, who is one of the O'Flahertys, a very famous musical family in Kerry, and Brian Lee, I think, is the owner. But they're, whichever one of them is behind the till, it's a great era of your time. If you like music, they just go in and they're huge aficionados of music and great conversationalists. They're great company, you know, and you talk about music, whatever you're into, and various songs and all that. But Maz used to she did this podcast with Irish musicians down the years. She gave it up a couple of years ago, but she put out a CD of all the compilation. It's a great thing to have it on a drive around the Dingle Peninsula, a kind of introduction to Irish music, like all the eclectic types of it. Like there's sea shanties on it. There's Shan No singers, which is what you were talking about, the unaccompanied singer in the pub, just, you know, stands up and there's a hush and nobody says a word and it's kind of magical. And then there's traditional Irish and I think there's a bit of choral music on it. It's a really lovely introduction to Irish music and it's called Fare Thee Well. So ask for that, Fare Thee Well, Sessions from the Shop, I think it's called. Great CD to bring home with you. I play it all the time here, you know. Where else in Dingle? Paul Geaney's pub on Main Street in Dingle is worth a pint as well, because Paul Geaney is a famous Kerry footballer, Gaelic football, which is a different type to soccer or rugby. It's kind of a mix. It's our own national game. So Paul's won championships with Kerry, but he's got a brother who every now and again takes to the dance floor and. It's just something else to watch. He's amazing. He's a world champion Irish dancer. He's danced in Las Vegas and, you know, I think he's danced in the White House and places like that. But he's just unbelievable. So if you catch him on a good day, you'll see David is his name. David Geaney doing his fancy footwork on the floor, and it's really special, you know. And then as you leave the town, there's the Dingle Distillery, which is well worth dropping into. It's a relatively new place. I think it's opened the last 10 years, but they do Dingle gin and Dingle whiskey. And what makes it special is they've got their own, they use water from their own well, which is 800 feet deep. So it's a real taste of the kingdom. You know, the kingdom is Kerry. We call Kerry the kingdom. But it's whatever they're doing it right. Like their whiskey is really, really beautiful. You probably know that whiskey is called Uisce Beatha in Gaelic, which literally means the water of life. You know, it was kind of started as a medicinal thing way, way back in medieval times. So, you know, which is why we say good health, slaunch you. You know, it's using this local water, and it's the tour is great. It's worth going to. So the Dingle Distillery. And then there's, you know, the scenery after that just gets absolutely spectacular. So that'll be one of my all-time drives, you know. The Barra Peninsula in Cork, that's a fantastic drive as well. It's south of the Ring of Kerry, so you could do the two. And, you know, if you're doing the Ring of Kerry, check out the Barra. The Barra is kind of the Irish secret that we don't like to tell, you know, outsiders. That
now we're talking.
It's like the secret Ring of Kerry, you know.
Yeah, okay.
But it's special. It's really lovely. You know, there's lovely places to stop on that. I did it last year with my friend Keith Brittle and his wife, and it's a good time. It's really special, you know.
Amazing. Thanks for that. You mentioned the modern Ireland, some of the changes. Have you noticed any changes in tourism, over tourism concerns? Where's kind of the tourist industry in Ireland going, in your opinion?
Well, it like everywhere else, I suppose it screeched to a shuddering halt there in 2020. I was actually there, and I was writing a story on Galway when COVID hit. And I ended up, Galway is one of the most vibrant cities in Europe, in my opinion, because there's so many festivals going on all the time. It's just a great, great town. But I was there, I think, in March or April, and suddenly the whole place was just closed. And I had to write a story on on this lively place. So I reinvented the story in my Irish way and called it The Ghosts of Galway. And I got a local historian, and it was interesting. We just walked through this ghost town, and he was pointing out all the historical things that happened in Galway. But as I say, it's probably recuperating from that, and it's probably reinventing itself a lot, like the rest of the world in terms of restaurants and that. You know, a lot of restaurants had to close, a lot of pubs had to close. The Irish pub, rural pub, has been struggling for years anyway, for a variety of reasons. It's just cheaper to drink at home, and people didn't want to be on the roads, and they banned smoking as well, and that didn't go down well in a lot of places, you know. But so there's a kind of reinvention going on. So to answer your question, I don't really know where the future of tourism is in Ireland. I think it'll take a year or two to kind of, you know, to head in that direction. But one thing I have noticed, and it's nice to see, is because it's kind of forward-looking. You know, the way we tell stories now in the 21st century is through films, you know, movies. And there's an awful lot of movie-related tourism happening in Ireland, which I think is great. It's a really good way of kind of bringing, you know, these ancient places into the 21st century and making them interesting to, I don't know, 20-year-olds who don't really care, you know, who aren't that interested in going around monastic sites. I'll give you a great example. The Skellig Islands in County Kerry, which are these two kind of, they're basically just big rocks coming out of the Atlantic Ocean about a mile off Port McGee in Kerry. And they're sandstone rocks, but what makes them interesting is that they were a 6th century monastic settlement, you know. And the monks built this incredible rock staircase I call it the staircase, the stairway to heaven, you know, that you can climb up and go all the way to the top. So it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, you know. It's a fantastic place. It's one of those places you've got to see once in your lifetime, you know. It's just absolutely unbelievable. But it's very hard to get to because the boats go out and the boats get cancelled all the time because of the Atlantic weather is kind of wild and unpredictable. And it's also, it's not that it's dangerous, but, you know, you wouldn't want to send somebody who wasn't very firm of foot out there, you know, an elderly person, because you have to climb 1,000 stairs of unprotected, you know, you make a slip, you're finished, that's it, you know. But you can go and you can just kind of drive past on the boats. The boats just do these drive-by kind of things, and it is worth seeing. But the reason I mentioned those in terms of the film industry is that they were used for two of the recent Star Wars movies, you know. They were used as a Jedi training center in on this planet called Akto or something. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but anyway, I'm not a Star Wars buff. But if you are a Star Wars buff, this is huge. It's like, you know, it's, you've got to go there. So they've now, the smart Kerry people have now initiated a festival for all these people who are interested in it called the May the 4th Festival, which happens on May the 4th, you know, play on May the 4th, of course. So on May the 4th every year, Kerry's inundated with all these people in what's called Darth Vader gear, swishing the swords around and all that. And it's great fun, and it brings a lot of tourists in, you know. And I can see that happening shortly with the two islands that were used for... have you seen the Banshees of Inisherin, Jason?
Not yet. I want to see that.
Yeah, but you know the story. It's set on two of the offshore islands. Or, sorry, on an offshore island for which they used two of the real ones, you know. So we did a story actually on it recently for in National Geographic Traveler. It's online if people want to look at that. They used the Aran Islands off Galway, which are really spectacular, and it's like all those stone walls and the Dunangus Fort on the cliff top, and it's a beautiful place to visit. You got to take a boat out there, but you go by the Cliffs of Moher, which you were talking about earlier. It's a lovely spot, and that's now going to become a destination because of the success of the Banshees, I think. And then the other place is Achill Island in County Mayo. That was the main setting for one of the characters' houses in it. It's on this little bay inlet on a beach. It's beautiful. But Achill is just—it's a great, great place. It's a real gem of Ireland's islands. By the way, we have a whole chapter on the islands, because again, I kind of felt I got overlooked a lot. But Achill is a fantastic place for families in particular. If you have kids, it's a really great place to bring them, because there's marvelous hiking trails, there's glorious beaches, there's stunning cliffs. It's a very kind of dramatic place because it's like right on the Atlantic, you know, you get the winds coming in. They have a kite festival every year, which is great fun. All the kids take the kites out and fly them. And the fairground comes every summer, so it's very festive, and it's a magical place, you know, a really, really lovely place. And it's got interesting things as well, Achill, like a deserted village, which was a famine era mountain site, and when the potato crop failed, everyone left to go fish in the sea, and it's just this kind of spooky, eerie, deserted village. It's got a lot of pirate folklore because of a woman called Grace O'Malley. Grace O'Malley was known as the Pirate Queen in Ireland in the 1500s. As kind of Gaelic Ireland was dying, the Elizabethans were pushing everyone west, and she was kind of the last holdout. And she would raid the ships in that Grace O'Malley. I caught up with a descendant of Grace O'Malley and interviewed her for the book. So her story's in the book. She's she has a house on Achill now. She lives in London, but she's a descendant of the Pirate Queen. Her name is Annette O'Malley, lovely woman. But again, film will bring a lot of people in. You know, the stories, the 21st century stories, if you like, that Ireland's telling now through film will hopefully attract a lot of people. This has been a common thing, you know, since the Quiet Man in the 50s, the John Wayne film. There's the village of Cong in County Mayo is still attracting people who want to see where John Wayne kissed Maureen O'Hara, Maureen O'Sullivan, or whatever, you know, all these years later. So it's good to see, you know. But to answer your question, I don't really know where the future is, but it's picking up again. It seems to be becoming as vibrant as it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So fingers crossed.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries, plus it's the best-reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something, and it makes an incredible gift. Under $50. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero-to-travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero-to-travel. Use the promo code zero-to-travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast, and we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. Last sort of destination question, and you could just give us one, but because you mentioned a couple of festivals already, but I was just wondering if you could share an amazing local festival that most travelers never see that we might want to put on a list for visiting Ireland.
there's so many. I'd have to think really, really long and hard about that. The best festival is the Fla Ceoil, which happens every year, and that's the traditional Irish festival. And the nice thing about the Fla Ceoil is that it moves around. It's a different destination every year. So the time I saw it was in Drogheda.
What's it called?
The Fla Ceoil. It's an Irish word for a festival of music. So Fla is FLEADH, Fla, and Ceoil, CEOIL. Fla Ceoil. So if you look up Fla Ceoil and find out where it is, you know, whenever you're going to be there, that's really the one to see. But of course, it mightn't coincide with your visit. There's also a great festival in Clonmel in County Tipperary, which you should check out. It's a street festival, and there's a busking festival down there, I believe, as well, which I haven't been to, but I'd like to. That's on my list of must-dos, the busking festival in Clonmel, County Tipperary. But, you know, the best thing to do is just, you know, whatever week you're over there, whatever 2 weeks, is just, you know, key in festivals and find out, or even better, just ask an Irish person, you know, where it'll be, because there's always something happening, particularly in the summer. You know, there's always going to be a festival happening. And the nice thing is there's different types of festival, like Drogheda, and the Boyne Valley has a harp festival. There's a big revival in harp playing, and you can go and you can sit in these chambers and listen to a very beautiful harpists play, you know, 17th century O'Carolan song, tunes and that kind of thing. So whatever type of music, you'll find it in Ireland. There's an opera festival in Wexford every year in October, you know. Whatever it is, Ireland will fulfill that need, because, as I said, musically, we're very, very open-minded, very eclectic, you know?
Yeah.
I haven't asked about food. I should just say one or two dishes we have to eat when we're in Ireland.
Oh, God. Well, it's interesting, actually, because when I left Ireland, this is a real insider secret, and I shouldn't say this in public, but I will. When I used to go to Galway in the 80s, you'd have to go on the back roads because the highway hadn't been built, and you'd stop in some town and you get an awful ham sandwich and a bit of cheese on it if you were lucky. You know, Ireland was just a dreadful place for food, I have to say, you know. But in the last 30 years, and we write about this in the book, there's been a revolution. And it's fantastic, you know, because what happened was all the chefs kind of went away to get trained in places like Paris and Stockholm and places like this. And they kind of realized that Ireland had the best produce. So why weren't we, you know, putting our best foot forward? And they brought back all these ideas. And then they went into the traditional Irish foods that had kind of died a death, you know, for 200 years. And they revived it all. So it's an amazing place to go now. The things you really should try are a good Irish stew if it's the winter. You can't beat a really good Irish stew made with lamb. In the summer, we've fantastic fish. You know, we've absolutely beautiful fish. So go to Kinsale, which is the foodie capital of Ireland. And there's a restaurant called Fishy Fishy, but there's a ton of them. There's, you know, 20 good fish restaurants, and just sample, you know, the creations of the local chefs, because they're very inventive with the fish, and the fish is just absolutely fantastic, you know. The first thing I do when I get off the plane, Jason, is and my sister hates me for this, she thinks I'm a Luddite, is I go for fish and chips.
It's
the one taste of Ireland that I can't get anywhere else.
I go for Mexican food when I get back to America.
There you go.
A Mexican restaurant, I don't care where, how, on the way from the airport.
Yeah.
Pull over, it doesn't matter.
Get me in there.
I think there is something about getting back to your home country and then just craving certain foods. So that was another reason why I asked about it. And, you have some recipes in the book, which is pretty cool. I thought that's not your typical guidebook move. Put a few recipes in there. Yeah, I like it. I might have to try a couple of these. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought it'd be fun just to throw in a few things and kind of relate them to the places and that, you know. Like my sister, Helen O'Brien, helped me with a lot. She's a fantastic cook. I'm a workaday cook at the best of times. But so a lot of them were kind of ideas that I got, and then she would knock them into shape. Like she has a Celtic coffee, which is big, and we give the story of that. It was invented by a barman down in County Clare, who was working on one of the first transatlantic flights, you know, dealing with customers coming in. And apparently the flight took off and had to be abandoned, and they all came back at 2 a.m. freezing. So he offered them hot coffee, and he thought, you know what, I'll just throw in some whiskey. And it took off from there with cream or whatever. But there's little stories about it like that. And the Irish stew that I gave, the beef stew at Guinness, was something that Con Houlihan, you know, the sports writer guy I mentioned earlier, he used to cook that in his home at 3 a.m. because he was a farmer, and he always used to have to get up at 3 a.m. and he'd put it on and he'd eat it at 7 a.m. and that was his routine, you know, and that kind of thing. So there's fun little stories, but Ireland's great for food, I've got to say it, and I never thought I'd say that when I was growing up, but it really has become a food destination, which is marvelous to see, you know.
So Con was cooking at 3 a.m., writing at 7 a.m., and taking his rookie colleagues out for a pint at 10 a.m.
He lived in his own time. He was living in the Kerry time. I was living in Dublin time. I was just out of bed and you know, on my first Irish press shift, kind of trying to be good, you know, and trying to impress people, and he was there here. We were going to my office next door in Mulligan's Pub, and next thing I had a pint in front of me. So, you know, he used to cook the stew like at 3 a.m. and just leave it cook. And then he'd write this, he wrote these huge lines. He had to hold the back page of a spreadsheet. So there'd be like a 1,000-word essay. And as I say, it would be vaguely about sport, but it would meander into, you know, Beckett and history on the continent and blah, 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 and on it would go. And then it would come back to sport at the end. It was very, very readable stuff. It was great. And then he would have his dinner, you know, at 6 a.m, go and file his copy. And people like me would just have to check it. And, of course, it would be word perfect. You couldn't touch it. It was sacrosanct, you know. It was Con Hoolan's thing, so... But and that was his day. He was done at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning, and he would go off, you know, to talk to barmen about who was going to win the FA Cup, or, you know, were Ireland going to qualify for the thing or whatever. So
he would get out of the office, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Out of the office, because nothing interesting ever happens in an office. Yeah.
There you go. We can finish on that. You want to share with everybody, kind of, yeah, where they can find you or the book or whatever. You want to share?
The book you can get anywhere. You can get it through Disney. You can get it through Amazon. Just key in Always Ireland, Jack Kavanagh. And if you want a little sample of the book, just go to the Instagram, which is at JK Global Text, at JK Global Text. And we just give little kind of samples of the book and photographs. As I say, I'll be going to Ireland in April, so I'll get busy on that. Hopefully, I'll have some fun new people to introduce that I'll come across on my travels in Ireland. But you can follow me on that and get a sample of the kind of things that are in the book, you know. So thank you very much, Jason, for having me. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed our chat. It was great.
Yeah, I did as well. Thank you. And I have to ask you one last question. You mentioned chatting and daydreaming kind of being the two unofficial pastimes in Ireland. What are you chatting and daydreaming about these days?
What am I chatting and daydreaming about? well, you know, it's interesting. I've been chatting to two people in Amsterdam. One of them is my nephew, and we were chatting about all kinds of things, mainly the new U2 album and to see what it'd be like, you know. U2 is the Dubliners what the Beatles were to Liverpool, you know. It's like we've been following them for so long that we're kind of interested. There's a lot of people outraged that they're going to have a residency in Las Vegas, but I kind of think it's the natural progression for them. They were always this huge band. I kind of feel like, you know, if they go full on Elvis, you know, it'll kind of be appropriate somewhere, you know. The other thing I've been chatting to is a great friend of mine, who I worked with in National Geographic. Actually, he was an intern in National Geographic when I worked in DC for international editions. And he's a great pal of mine called Kenny Ling. And Kenny Ling is from Malaysia. And our shared passion is football, soccer, you know. So we have been discussing the recent resurrection of Manchester United, you know. And it's Manchester United is a very Irish club, and this surprises people. They kind of say, "Why do you follow English football, English soccer so closely? You know, you're Irish or whatever." But we have our own Gaelic games in Ireland, which we love, and that's one great thing to do when you're in Ireland. You should try and get to a Gaelic game. It's amateur sport, but there could be 60,000 at a final, or 80,000 at an All Ireland final. But we also keep a close eye on British clubs, because down the years, a lot of people have gone across and played for them, you know, who are Irish. So it's Manchester United is a particularly closely followed club in Dublin because of a guy called Bill Whelan. And Bill Whelan, unfortunately, was one of the Busby Babes, the famous team that crashed. The plane crash in Munich in 1958. So, you know, because we lost Liam Whelan in Munich, there's a special bond, you know, that Irish people feel that Manchester United is part of us, you know. Liverpool has that Irish connection as well, because there's so many Irish in Liverpool. But that's something that surprises a lot of my guests, how close the two cultures are, you know. We had an 800-year marriage of inconvenience, as I call it, you know, and the divorce was pretty bitter. But there's a lot of very tight bonds between the Brits and us, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm chatting about these days.
Yeah, love it. You know, there's a big following here where you see it a lot in the news of Manchester City because of Erling Haaland.
Oh, of course, he's Norwegian,
Norwegian. He's the striker, so he's getting a lot of, you know, they always show the highlights on. Anytime a Norwegian goes out in the world, you know how it is being from a small... A little over 5 million people in Norway, so if a Norwegian goes out and does something prominent in the world, it's just like...
It's everywhere, yeah.
It's everywhere, man. Thanks for your time. You know, I will mention just quickly, because, you know, you love music. I do play in a rock band here, so if you can get us any gigs in Ireland, you know, we're there.
What's your band called?
Laundry House. I'll send you a link. So anyway, give us an excuse to come to Ireland, because we're looking to go on the road a little bit here with our little show. So
I'll tell you now, if you're interested, we're actually having, I'm putting together a launch for this book in Dublin on April the 14th. You know, so if you want to come on and play a few songs, you're more than welcome. You know.
Yeah, not a paid gig, I'm guessing.
No, it wouldn't be a huge gig. It wouldn't be sellout, like, you know. But but it'd be a pub gig, you know, it'd be in Kennedy's pub. Hey, like, that'd be fun.
That would be a dream. Listen, if I could play music in an Irish pub like that to a crowd, sort of a bucket list thing for me. It'd be a dream come true. I've always wanted to sit in on an Irish session and have somebody show me some things and just like be a part of it. So cool.
What do you play, Jason? Are you a guitarist?
Yeah, I play a pretty crappy guitar. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the nice thing about sessions is it doesn't matter what level you're at. You can join in Ireland, you know, as long as you know a few chords and as long as you're respectful of, you know, it's great. It's nice.
And I am respectful when I know a few chords. So there you go.
Three chords is the truth, as they say. Yeah. That's all you need. Yeah,
I fit the qualifications, I guess, there. So, thanks so much, Jack, and I look forward to staying in touch, and good luck on your next trip over, and enjoy Philadelphia for me. Enjoy a cheesesteak for me.
I will. Thanks a million, Jason. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay.
There you have it. Thank you once again to Jack Cavanaugh for stopping by the show. Congratulations on the new book, and hope you enjoyed hearing his recommendations and some of his stories from his home country. Certainly gave me that vibe of wanting to jump on a plane over to Ireland. Going to do that in the next few years. I want to check out that roving music festival. Anyway, I want to give a quick shout out here. I'm going to leave you with a quote as well and a little challenge from today's interview to set you about your day. First, I got a follow-up email from Emily, a listener of the show. I'll read you a little bit of it. She said, I first reached out to you a little over a year ago, never reached back out because I was still in a fog and very uncertain about what the heck I was going to do with my life. I am now happily messaging you 13 months later to let you know that I did find a bit of a path. I am only 25. I know it'll change 10 times over. However, I'm not excessively stressed and sad over not knowing anymore. So that's huge. Congratulations on that. She goes on to say she didn't decide to settle down in her hometown in Florida, and she will, quote, be pursuing my goal of working in wildlife conservation and traveling. I graduate from the University of South Florida in May with a bachelor's. I'm in a much better headspace than I was this time last year. I decided not to settle on the 5-year program, which would have been nice. I love my job, but it wasn't my calling. Traveling and working in conservation, that's my calling. My fiance and I have discussed adding more travel into our lives in the next few years to come. Once we've saved up a bit and are more on our feet, we've adopted 2 dogs together and have decided that that'll never hold us back and we'd still travel even if that meant bringing them. She goes on to say, you've helped me find some balance of desire and how to achieve my dreams, but also to find myself. Thanks for all you do. So thank you so very much for the kind words. And I just want to say congrats and just highlight that mindset there. I love that they decided to adopt the 2 dogs and bring them into their life. That was something they wanted to do. But the mindset that she puts forward there, that'll never hold us back. We'll still travel even if that means bringing them. And I just wanted to highlight that quickly because I think that's pretty powerful. Just kind of bringing things into your life and you're saying that this isn't going to hold you back. I remember I avoided living somewhere for so long that when I finally did buy a place in Colorado, that was a big struggle for me when I was settling down from my nomad days because my mindset was that any possession or anything like that was going to hold me back from traveling. So I had to change my mindset and say, hey, look,
this isn't going to hold me back. I'm not going to let buying a condo stop me from traveling. And once I embraced that mindset, it just changed the way I approach things. I actually started looking for a place that could accommodate my travels. That meant, you know, having a garage I could put my stuff in, having the capability to rent it out. It just changed the dynamic and just that mindset shift. I just wanted to highlight that thing and whatever you're bringing into your current daily life. And if you're trying to plan your travels in the future, you want to add more travel into your life over the next few years, like Emily does or whatever the case, just remember that if you're putting everything through that travel lens, make sure you have the right mindset and the right approach. So when you're adding these things into your daily life, just look at them in a way that they're not going to prevent you from traveling. I think that's good and healthy for people that want to travel. And it really opens up the mind in different ways to figure out how you can accommodate those things with the travel lifestyle you want to have. So I just wanted to highlight that and to just give Emily a quick shout out there. And congrats on not settling on that program and kind of going for your travel dreams. So right on. Okay. I will leave you with a James Joyce quote. First, you know, a little challenge to send you off on your day if you're looking for one. That idea of chatting and daydreaming, that really stuck with me. We talked about that in the interview, the two Irish pastimes, according to Jack, daydreaming and chatting. And what a great way to spend the day. He mentioned just kind of spending a day like that on your travels without an agenda. And so that's a challenge I'm throwing out to you, whether you're home or on the road. Spend a day without an agenda, chatting and daydreaming. Doesn't that sound nice and relaxing? I'm going to find a day in my calendar, and I'm literally going to put down chatting and daydreaming as my tasks for the day. So go for it if you want to do the same. Doesn't that sound fun? Open up your calendar one day, and you see, oh, all I have to do today is chat and daydream. Perfect. I can do that. Now I'm going to leave you with this powerful short quote from James Joyce, who said, "Mistakes are the portals of discovery." Thanks for listening, and I'll see you soon. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.